ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're continuing our reading from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're beginning chapter 6, which is entitled The Progeny of the Daughters of Daksha. So there's a chapter summary. I'll read that first and then we'll do verse number 1. As described in this chapter, Prajapati Daksha begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife, Asikni. These daughters were given in charity to various persons to increase the population. Since these offspring of Daksha were women, Narada Muni did not try to lead them toward the renounced order of life. Thus, the daughters were saved from Narada Muni. 10 of the daughters were given in marriage to Dharmaraj, 13 to Kashyap Muni, and 27 to the moon god, Chandra. In this way, 50 daughters were distributed. And of the other 10 daughters, 4 were given to Kashyapa, and 2 each to Bhuta, Angira, and Kshashva. One should know that it is because of the union of these 60 daughters with various exalted personalities that the entire universe was filled with various kinds of living entities, such as human beings, demigods, demons, beasts, birds, and serpents. Sri Shuka Vacha Tathak Pracheta So Siknyam Anunitak Sayambhuva Shashting Sanjanayang Asa Dohitri Pitri Vatsalaha. Sri Shuka Vacha Tatak Pracheta So Siknyam Anunitak Soyambhuva Shashting Sanjayam Asa Duhitri Pitri Vatsalaha. Sri Shuka Vacha Tatak Pracheta So Siknyam Anunitak Soyambhuva Shashting Sanjanayam Asa Duhitri Pitri Vatsalaha. Please chant. Sri Shuka Vacha Shashting Sanjanayam Asa Duhitri Pitri Vatsalaha. Shashting Sanjanayam Asa Duhitri Pitri Vatsalaha. Sri Shuka Vacha Tathak Pracheta So Siknyam Anunitak Sayambhava Shashting Sanjanayam Asa Duhitri Pitri Vatsalaha. Vaishnavis, Vakracheta so suknyam Anunitak Soyambhuva Shashtim Sanjanayam Asa Pitri Pitrivatsala. Okay, synonyms. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Tataha. After that incident, Prachetasaha. Daksha. Asikniyam. In his wife named Asikni. Anunitaha. Pacified. Swayambhuva. By Lord Brahma. Shastim. 60. Sanjanayam asa. Begot. Duhitrihi. Daughters. Pitrivatsalaha. All very affectionate to their father. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, my dear king, thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Daksha, who is known as Prachetasa, begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife, Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate toward their father. Please repeat. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, my dear king, thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Daksha, who is known as Prachetasa, begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife, Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate toward their father. Srila Prabhupada's purport. After the incidents concerning the loss of his many sons, Daksha repented his misunderstanding with Narada Muni. Lord Brahma then saw Daksha and instructed him to beget children again. This time, Daksha was very cautious to beget female children instead of male children, so that Narada Muni would not disturb them by urging them to accept the renounced order. Females are not meant for the renounced order of life. They should be faithful to their good husbands. For if a husband is competent for liberation, his wife will also achieve liberation with him. As stated in the Shastra, the results of a husband's pious activities are shared by his wife. Therefore, a woman's duty is to be very chaste and faithful to her husband. Then, without separate endeavor, she will share in all the profit the husband earns. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Srinivada Paschachade Shatarine Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmulitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnu Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadanti Kam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavaksha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raganatan Matam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Matam Sha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripre Vancha kalpataruvyasya kripasinu me evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaisnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Last night on Haridam, Ratnabhushan Prabhu was very kindly handing out water, so I still have my own. So, obviously we're not dealing with an ordinary couple here. Prajapati Daksha and his wife Asikni. Do we know of any ordinary human beings, couples, that can produce 10,000 sons in one shot? There's a very, very big logistical problem here. What kind of prenatal care did she get? And seriously. And I mean, how long, over what span of time did it take for her to pop out 10,000 sons? And I guess there's no question of breastfeeding when you have 10,000 offspring. I mean, obviously these are not ordinary personalities here. Now we know from the Mahabharata that, generally speaking, on the level of the demigods, when they have children, they don't go through this, painful labor and stuff like that. The children literally pop out and they are full grown at birth. So there's no diaper training and potty training and all that kind of stuff. That's one of the benefits of having children on the level of the demigods. So we presume that since Prajapati Daksha and his wife are actually above that level, you'd say, in one sense, because now their daughters are going to beget demigods. So in one sense, you could say they're on a higher level than the demigods. So I don't think she went through painful labor and all this kind of stuff. It's a different arrangement. So after 10,000 sons popping out and then 1,000 other sons, the Savalashvas, now they have 60 daughters who are given in marriage to great sages. And it's notable that, again, Daksha and his wife are so controlled, they can decide in advance what type of offspring they want to have and quantity. 10,000 Haryashvas, 1,000 Savalashvas, and now 60 daughters. In advance, he decided, I'm going to have daughters this time, no sons. So this business of knowing the sex in advance is very interesting to couples. Many, many couples would like to know in advance, are we going to have a son or a daughter? Actually, in some societies, it's practically critical. They want to know. And because the end result is so sometimes not very humane, let's say, to put it mildly, like for instance, in India, a lot of couples still would like to have a male child, right off the bat. And to this effect, the government, they've banned the sonogram, they've banned them from checking in advance, because the end result for many of them is that when they find out they're going to have a daughter, they have an abortion. Or if they're too poor to afford the abortion, then after the girl is born, then they neglect it, so she dies early in childhood. This kind of abominable stuff is going on. Because people don't know the value of life. And therefore now India is skewed so badly. For every 1,000 male children that are born, it's down to now, in 2001 they say it was like 927 female, now it's down to 911 female to each 1,000 boys. So one MP, member of parliament, recently said, I was reading, that if this continues, India's just going to be a whole country full of homosexuals, because the men won't have any women, to marry. So this is Kali Yuga. Now, even though they've banned the sonogram, the higher classes, materially speaking, with money, they still get it done, either in India or they go abroad, and then again, when they find out they're going to have a girl, they usually kill it. But it's not only India, not picking on India. It happens elsewhere also. In China, very, very bad problem there also. Some Chinese lady, I forget her name, her book is very popular now. It's on the New York Times well-selling list, if not the best-seller list. She wrote that in the villages in China, it's so bad that when the midwife comes, she prepares two bowls, one with water, special water to wash the child if it's a male, and another one to drown the child if it's a female. So people have lost sight of real human values. They've lost sight of the goal of life. This is what happens when you don't have dissemination of standard spiritual culture. There's no standard education as to what the value of life is all about. They don't know. And therefore, for materialistic reason, they want to have sons, not daughters. But imagine if the Vedic culture, they say, well, this is traditional. But yeah, but why in the Vedic culture in the earlier days that it was so valuable to have a son? Because it was a patriarchal society and there were the divisions of Varna and ashram. So generally speaking, the male heir would take care of the family. It was very valuable to have a male child first to establish this traditional, but it was not an abusive society. Here, the daughters are very, very fond of their father. Why? Because generally speaking, in Vedic culture, the women are taken care of very nicely. They're protected. That's what it was all about. Some portion of the male society was trained as kshatriyas to give protection to all the citizens, particularly the cows, the brahmanas, the women, and the children. Those were the topmost classes that needed to be protected. And the elderly also. But the cows came first. Cows, brahmanas, women, children, elderly, to be protected. And they were happy in that protection. It wasn't artificial. Here we see that Daksha and his wife, giving their daughters in charity to various sages. So somebody may think, well, what is this? The father think that the daughters are his property, he can give them away. But again, it was a benign attitude. It was not one of being hurtful to the daughters at all. Besides, what option did they have in those days? They couldn't go to their local disco and pick up a guy. They couldn't go to some co-ed college somewhere and meet some boy. You know, it didn't work like that. And everything was taken into consideration. There were trained brahmanas who could see the astrological charts of the boy and the girl, and everything was done very, very, very nicely. So people tended to be happy. Not like nowadays. You know, the girl, you know, before she gets out of high school, she's already, you know, violated. And then she goes to college and it becomes worse. And then she gets a job and it becomes worse. Nowadays, you can't even volunteer. I was reading another story. It's so hellish nowadays. The Peace Corps. Many young ladies in the United States, they still volunteer to go out and do, you know, volunteer work in other countries. They join the Peace Corps. But a high percentage of them get abused sexually and raped. And the Peace Corps, instead of giving them protection, they try to get them to not even report it, because they don't want to dissuade other girls from joining the Peace Corps. The whole thing now just came to a head. They had a congressional hearing recently, and the head of the Peace Corps had to apologize. What's the use of your apology after so many girls have been violated? So this is a culture that we live in. There's no protection for the cows. There's no protection. Well, there are hardly any Brahmins anyway. Srila Prabhupada is trying to change that around by training a few. The women are not protected. The children are not protected. Elderly are not protected. Everybody's abused and exploited. So there is a definite need for dissemination of this knowledge. There's a standard body of knowledge that should be taught to all human beings, to make them human beings. Jamana Jayate Shudra. And nowadays they're born less than Shudra, and there is no training. There is no training. So how you can expect them to elevate? And therefore, even though they look, again, people are very satisfied if the baby just looks normal. One head, two arms, two legs. You're laughing. But recently a child was born with two heads and one body. And that's also in the news. Two heads, one body. So they're very happy if there's one head, two arms, two legs. And that's so, you know, and if the child is a little bit intelligent and can be sent to school, oh, wow, we hit the jackpot. But they don't train them in the standard spiritual knowledge. You're not this body, you're a spirit soul. The goal of life is to go back to home, back to Godhead, not just to acquire material things. And we see there are so many people around the world who have all the material necessities, and they're still not happy. We are all from that background. Most of us here were raised not in poverty, we were raised, you know, two cars in the driveway and enough to eat in the refrigerator, enough clothing to wear, no heavy material worries. And we were not happy. That's why we joined Prabhupada's movement. We were not happy. So happiness will never be made through material adjustment. You cannot make the population happy by adjusting matter, giving you more of this and more of that and more of this and more of that. And this is what our misleaders nowadays don't understand. And because there's no standard training, the leaders don't take up this business of protection very seriously. By default, the president is the head of the armed forces. But when there's some conflict, where is he? He's sitting in the White House or going on trips with his family. And that's not to pick on the current president. That's just a standard all around the world. The leaders stay home comfortably, eating and drinking, and they send the young men out to die. And funnily enough, that's the same in all camps, even amongst the terrorists. You see now bin Laden. He was the head Al-Qaeda. What was he doing? Living comfortably in a house with his four wives and 20 kids, and the young men are going out on suicide missions. So whether you're a terrorist or not a terrorist, the leaders, they're staying home comfortably, and the young men go out and kill each other. Huh? And even the young women, like they said, when they busted it in the compound, his youngest wife had been given to him in charity, just like now, you know, this tradition is still there in some quarters. She was from Yemen. Her family, Yemeni family, had given her to bin Laden in charity when she was 15. So, you know, it's so funny. A Yemeni family can find him to give their daughter in charity, but the CIA can't find him. It's amazing, the world that we live in. The intelligence agencies of all these top countries, they can't find a man. But some Yemeni family can find him to send their 15-year-old daughter to give him in charity. So when the Navy SEALs broke in, this youngest wife, She was so brave. She actually charged them, even though she didn't have any guns or anything. They had to shoot her in the leg to stop her. Brave soldiers. They shot her in the leg, even though she was unarmed. This is the kind of world we live in. Kind of world we live in. There's no leaders, no qualified leaders, and therefore everybody's unhappy. The world can only be happy when you have qualified leaders. When you have qualified leaders. And to be qualified, they have to be trained. So Srila Prabhupada, part of his mission was to reestablish, or at least try to reestablish, the proper standard of human civilization, meaning varnashram. You have to have these four varnas, and people have to be trained how to be kshatriyas, how to be brahmanas, how to be vaishyas, how to be shudras. They have to be trained. And then you have to have the ashrams have to be there also. The brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and that requires training also. Otherwise, instead of brahmacharis, you wind up with grihacharis. Literally. They're wearing saffron, but, you know, they have a big bank account and this and that. And this is not brahmachari life. It's not brahmachari life. A brahmachari life means brahmachari guru koli vasanadi guru hitam. You go to the home of the spiritual master, in other words, the spiritual master, spiritual institution, and you surrender there. You surrender and you take instruction. You learn the Vedic knowledge. And you serve the spiritual master according to his or her desire, not according to your desire. This is brahmachari life. Otherwise, again, you wind up with brahmachari name only. And then, if the brahmacharis are not properly trained, then how are you going to get proper grihasthas? You know, the tendency, especially in the early days of ISKCON, was, oh, this person is having trouble in brahmachari life, so let's get him married. So if we can't execute brahmachari life properly, you think he's going to be a proper grihastha? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So proper training has to be there. That's what brahmachari ashram is meant for, to be properly trained. Then you can move on to the next step in the proper consciousness. And then you have a chance of having happy grihastha couples as far as possible. And then they will produce offspring that have a chance of being properly trained to carry on the society. Otherwise, if you're not properly trained as a brahmachari, you can't hold on to brahmachari principles, then you're not going to make a good grihastha. It's not going to happen. You're going to be tired of the wife after a little time. You're going to be looking around again. Either you're going to be having affairs or you're going to have a divorce and marry again and again and again. So, this Bhagavatam is showing us how cultured people were. Daksha, yes, he made mistakes, but who among us could live up to the scrutiny that this individual soul has lived up to? We know about his previous life, the mistakes that he made. He insulted Lord Shiva. His head was chopped off. He was given a goat's head. Then he takes birth again as the son of the Prachetas, and now he makes another mistake, insulting Narad Muni. Everything he's done is under the microscope. Who among us could live like that? Everything that we do is under a microscope. Everything that we've done is examined. Anybody here so elevated that we won't find any mistakes if we put you under the microscope? But he's not an ordinary person, Daksha. Very cultured, we see. He repents his mistake. Lord Brahma comes to see him. Who among us is so qualified that Lord Brahma is going to come and tell us what to do next? No, Lord Brahma comes and tells him, now I want you to again have progeny. In spite of what happened in the past, go on, because this is your duty, your service. So he's not ordinary. We should not, you know, vilify Daksha in any way. He's not an ordinary person. Very cultured. He and his wife are so exalted that they can decide what kind of offspring, not just the number of offspring, but what kind of offspring. They gave birth through their daughters to demigods, to human beings, to birds, to beasts, to demons. So all of us, the underlying point to take away from this is that everybody in this universe is related in two ways. Krishna says, Mamai Vangsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We're all Krishna's parts and parcels. So we're related spiritually. But we're also related materially because we're all descendants of these daughters of Daksha. Every one of us. We're all descended from these daughters of Daksha. So, you know, this business of feeling I'm superior to somebody else because I'm from this country or I have this color skin or all, it's nonsense. Complete stupidity. We're all related materially and spiritually. Nobody's superior to anybody else in this material world, either in the spiritual or the material platform eventually. Because even if for a little while you seem to be materially superior, you have more money or more education, whatever, what happens at the end? It's all taken away. So you start with nothing and you may rise up materially, but at the end, we all leave in the same way, with nothing. So there's no necessity of this discrimination based on skin color and ethnicity and this and that. It's all nonsense. It means, again, people are not properly trained in proper values of life and how to achieve the goal of life. So this section of the Bhagavatam is very, very important to take away these valuable lessons. Everybody's related, so why can't we live peacefully as relatives? Because in this Kali Yuga especially, the material aspect of life is overly stressed. You know, you have to have this material, you have to have that material, you have to get it together. Meanwhile, instead of really getting it together, we're tearing everything apart. We're burning up the fossil fuels unnecessarily, putting a strain on the environment, putting a strain on people's lives. It's a healthy situation. So those of us who have taken to this path, it's a very, very serious path. It's very joyfully performed. Like last night, we were having fun dancing in the streets and people were dancing with us. Yes, it's joyfully performed. But it's a very, very serious responsibility to ourselves, first of all, because charity begins at home. If you're not interested in saving yourself, then you're not going to be really interested in saving anybody else. It's not possible. So we have to take these lessons that Srila Prabhupada is so, like Prabhupada said in the... that, you know, Sura was mentioning that Prabhupada said, now I'm an old man, and this responsibility falls on you young people now. Just traveling business, traveling and preaching. Let me sit down and finish translating the Bhagavatam. Because he knew this Srimad Bhagavatam is so important for us to imbibe, to meditate on, so that we can reform our own lives and together try to reform society. So we'll stop here. Any questions, comments? Vanabhata Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very informative class. You had mentioned how so many discrepancies are there in this age and in the world, so many problems are going on. Without having a proper leader to set an example and lead people, things won't change. So I'm wondering, why is it that Prabhupada did not give specific training to devotees as kshatriyas? Because we know without a kshatriya leader, I mean, the king is considered the representative of God. And of course, you know, there are no monarchies at this point. And yet it seems that even the Brahminical class, which is so important, for those ideals to be properly instituted, we need to have a proper kshatriya, you know, class. So why is it that it wasn't, you know, formally instituted within this country?
Good question. But it starts with the head. The Brahmanas are the head of society. If you have no head, you may have very strong arms, or you're not going to go anywhere. So Prabhupada's first business was to put the head back on society. He said that many times. Try to create the Brahminical class again. Because with the properly trained head, properly thinking head, then the arms can be directed. The first duty of the Kshatriya is to give protection. And that can be taught quite easily. You know, there are so many schools that teach martial arts. And Prabhupada said, protection in this age anyway means guns and sticks. It's not like before where we had to go through, you know, this training with bows and arrows and mantras. And, you know, and there's no time in this age for that. Basically, right here in New York, he said, you're not taking protection seriously. You know, because he saw there was no patrol, there was nothing. So immediately devotees started scrambling and walking with guns. And, you know, because Prabhupada said, in this age, you know, protection means guns and sticks. So yes, there may be some training in how to stick fight and stuff like that, and how to use a firearm. You have to. When I lived in Alatra, there were a class of devotees there who regularly went for gun practice. I went on a couple of times, and so that's required. You need to, you know, because you can't just pick up a gun and start shooting willingly. You have to train. You have to practice to use it properly.
The that's true. I mean, the real, you know, kings that we read about in Mahabharata, though, they were Rajarishis. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were saintly kings, and so, you know, the quality that they imbibed, you know, like chivalry and heroism, resourcefulness, and all these qualities that people look up to now, and they don't see, you know, in anyone. it seems that, like, those are the qualities that, you know, are needed within society. I mean, in terms of...
But those are naturally given. Krishna says, Chato Varna Mayashisham Guna Karma Bhak. I am the one that's created these varnas. These tendencies are there naturally, given by Krishna. So they just have to be polished. Even though there's no standardized varnashram existing, but we see people have those tendencies. There are those who have the chashya tendencies naturally, those who have the brahminical tendencies naturally, those who have vaishya tendencies naturally, and shudra. Most of the population falls in that. So all it takes is, again, when the head is put on the society, that functioning head can then start to reform all the other varnas, to bring properly trained chachyas into being, to bring proper, but the tendencies are there already. There are those amongst us who naturally have the tendency to give protection. That's just their natural, you know, but it's all mixed up with other tendencies and it just needs to be refined. So first of all, you have to have the head. And that's what Prabhupada's mission was. When you have, he only stayed with us for 12 years in terms of creating this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So in that relatively short period of time, he had to concentrate on putting the head. But then if the head is there properly, then everything else will come into fruition. It will fructify nicely. The properly trained brahmanas, vaishnavas, preferably vaishnava brahmanas, can then set up training for kshatriyas, set up training for vaishyas, set up training for shudras, etc. That subsequent parts are not that difficult when you have a properly functioning head. Yes, Amala Bhakta Prabhu.
Thank you again for a wonderful class.
Hare Krishna.
I just wanted to add something to what you already just said a few moments ago. And that is that in Vedic culture there is no bar to a Brahmin becoming a Kshatriya for his profession. We have some very good examples of this. We have Dronacharya, who was born as a Brahmin, his father is Bhardwaj, and who not only became a Kshatriya, but actually became a king when he defeated King Drupada. Half of his kingdom went to him. And then we have Kripacharya, who is another very good example of a great Kshatriya. So as you were mentioning, having these foundational qualities of which lead to understanding and sensitivity and reasonableness, purity, they help a Kshatriya because they enable the person to make the kind of decisions that a Kshatriya should make when he's in tune or in touch with the Supreme Lord. Whereas sometimes a Kshatriya will neglect that aspect, the more spiritual focusing on the Supreme Lord. We know that Dronacharya, when he just before he was killed, when he heard Ashwatthama had been killed, which he had not really been, he was sitting on his chariot in deep meditation, ready to leave his body. He had that kind of ability, that kind of quality. So it never hurts to become a Brahmin, even if you have Kshatriya tendency.
Yeah, very good. Anything else, Savas Prabhu?
Yeah, just to further expand on this issue, in that, you know, until we in Krishna consciousness really establish like a genuine Gurukul, it would be very difficult to create this Varnashram, meaning that even Krishna went to Gurukul.
Yeah.
And in the house of the Guru, and from there he learned how to perform tapasya, austerity. But when I was in Thailand, I was there with this Rishikesh Ananda, I think his name was, and he took me to a temple where the king of Thailand went to Gurukul. Mm. You know, it was a compound, and you can go there and tourist. So we went there, and where he stayed in his room. It was very simple, austere, and you know, every day he rose early, you know, chanted their Buddhist prayers, was taught by a Buddhist priest. So, meaning that, how you know, it's hard to take a 25-year-old young man coming to Krishna consciousness and train him up how to become a Kshatriya. You know, he's been out there drinking and doing all kinds of crazy stuff, right. You know, who knows what. So really, if we want to change that, then we as a society, I mean, if that's what our goal is, if that's what we are concerned about, you know, development of Brahminical culture, Kshatriya culture, you know, and all, and Vaishya. If we don't have, of course, the Vaishya's sutras, maybe they don't go so much to Gurukul, but, you know, we need to have young children that are produced and are brought into a Gurukul and trained properly. Not like the disaster that we went through, but proper training in performing austerities, chanting mantra, understanding how to become benevolent, respectful, you know, a servant, learn how to be a servant. And then from that, eventually you can develop a society of what we wish would be there.
Very good point. It's usually the guru that makes those divisions by observing the boys, girls also, but generally in Vedic culture it's the boys. By observing them, the guru sees the tendency. This one has a Brahminical tendency, this one has a Chachi tendency. And then they were given proper training accordingly. It wasn't just like, you know, I want to be a Chachi and like that. I mean, the guru had to see that you had the proper qualification.
I mean, even with us, Srila Prabhupada said that it was a state of emergency. So he's giving out the Brahminical initiation because it was in time of war, it's an emergency. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a farm boy, probably gave example, sometimes a farm boy,
yeah,
he can go out to and goes to war and comes back a general or something, you know, because he performs such great activity.
All right,
just wanted to add one comment. Your points are very well taken, Silas. I think what Bhanabhato was originally referring to is not so much the Chachi mood of warfare and protection, but also administratively to be able to handle a society. Am I correct? To be able to handle the management of a group of people or a country or a region, not just to be able to
point
guns.
That's part of the training
of
a Chachi. You're not a Chachi if you can't do that. Chachi had to be trained to do all of that. Yeah. And now what we have is we have the military training without all the other aspects of it, and therefore recently, like it was on the news, there was some Navy SEAL that he went out partying or whatever, got drunk, and he took a stick and he was just going on and just beating people indiscriminately, smashing people over the head, knocking them down. And that's what happens. They have the strength and they have the training. Even these are SEAL. You know, these are the guys that went into Pakistan. These guys get heavy training, but because they don't have any spiritual culture, they don't have any spiritual training. In an instant, they can snap and turn against their own people. This guy was just going down the street of an American, you know, just right here in California, smashing people and beating them up. And he claims he doesn't remember. Somebody must have, you know, poisoned him while he was at the bar. You know. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.